What's up, Dialed fam? Happy Wednesday and welcome to the Strength Training for Cyclists podcast by Dialed Health. My name is Derek Teal. I'm the owner and head coach here at dialedhealth.com. And today's podcast is without a doubt the most I have ever prepared for any podcast, period. I really wanted to dive into these notes and make sure I didn't miss anything for you because we're going to be talking about the perfect cycling diet. I took this very seriously. I have literally a couple pages of notes in front of me, so I will be reading through them. And then as I read through the points, I'll make sure I touch on anything extra that comes to mind at the time. I'm sure there will be some ranting involved, but I'm very, very stoked to break it down this way. I think some of you that are Dialed fam OGs, we'll call you, you've probably heard some of the stuff about food tracking I'm going to talk about, but we go so specifically into the type of foods to eat, building a perfect day, high quality, low quality foods, hydration, and all those things that you probably haven't heard me talk about before. So I hope you're looking forward to that. Now, before we get into that main bulk topic of the episode, we have some member questions that were written in. The first one is going to be talking about kit pricing versus quality. The next one is training through injuries. And then we have measuring body fat on home scales. After that, of course, we're gonna follow it with a little update. I have some really cool riding updates. It's my wife's birthday today, actually, as I'm recording this. I'll tell you about what we're doing tonight. It does involve tequila. That was a little suggestive. Don't even go there. Listen, we're just going out to eat, but I wanna tell you about it because it's kind of a cool story. And we also have a little motivational quote to get us into the episode. But before we move on, please, if you are enjoying the podcast, can you drop me a 5-star rating on the Apple Podcast app and just write a little review, anything positive? Literally, it doesn't even have to make sense. But the more it makes sense, the better. Just let people know what value you're getting out of the podcast. Don't overthink it. You don't even have to use your own name, but it's something I can't do for myself. And it really helps the podcast grow. And this is something I really want to try and push to grow. And I can't wait for this thing to continue because, funny enough, we actually officially have over 1,000 regular listeners. And it's interesting. I always wonder what people think in regards to podcast listens, because you hear these huge shows like Joe Rogan and Ed Milet and all these guys who are getting millions of downloads, apparently. And I think that they are, because it seems like, you know, Joe Rogan got a $100 million Spotify deal or something like that. So it probably is. But it's funny because even compared to my other social outlets, it's like this has the smallest traffic, but then again, it almost sometimes feels like it has the most impact. But I'll tell you, I've had, you know, 500 listeners, 600 listeners, 700, and we finally cracked over 1,000. So that's really cool. And then I'll get, you know, episodes with, you know, well over 1,000 plays for whatever reason. But anyways, thought I'd share that little milestone with you guys. So now that it's growing, let's keep it moving. Thank you for all the help. And here's our motivational question, or a little, pump up for you for the day. It is this: there is pain in staying the same and there is pain in growth. Which one will you choose? Now, I think no matter what you're talking about, the pain of growth has to be less than the pain of staying the same or continuing dealing with the current problems that you are. And that really applies to the diet conversation that we have today, but it also does with training and, oh my gosh, with just general daily habits, work stuff that you're doing. All the pain that you have to go through to get to the level you want really has to be less than the current like misery that you might be in from staying the same or not addressing something that you really want. So I'm just bringing it up. It's a valid question. Which one will you choose? Okay, let's dive into it. This first question is from @Bosborne_123 on Instagram. He says, "All right, bro, another noob question. I don't think you've answered this on a podcast or a post. I've looked, but I saw the release of your Dialed Health MTB jersey and road kit. I just discovered bibs and they're so much better than padded shorts. But my question is, why are name brand like the Dialed Health bibs so expensive? I've been wearing eBay/Amazon bibs and they seem to be fine for the most part, but they're around $25 to $50 a pair. I guess what I'm asking is, are you paying for the name brand or are there actual benefits like thicker padding or something? I just want to be clear that I'm not hating on the price of your bibs or any other gear, just trying to educate myself to justify the purchase. Love your content, love what you're about, keep up the great work." You know, I'm going to keep this answer pretty short. If you know, you know. And you don't know right now, but you know what? Ignorance is bliss. Because if you're perfectly happy with your $25, $50 pair, I don't know what brand they are, if there is even a brand attached to it. Dude, that's fine. But I will say, you are not just paying for the name brand. I mean, maybe there are some companies out there that are a little higher priced than they should be based on how they feel. But I'll tell you, every time I've bought a more expensive pair of bibs. You know, like right now I wear the LEL brand and I can't believe how much more comfortable they are than my past stuff. Specialized does make some good stuff also. You know, I'm biased, but it's like literally as that price tag has come up, there's been some feature or some feeling to the product where I'm like, oh, I didn't know about that. Oh, you know what I mean? Like you put that thing on in the mirror and you do a couple little shimmies and you're like, hey, yo, that's hitting all the right spots that I need. And you sit on the seat and it's just that much more comfortable. When you start moving, you go throughout the day. I mean, there's so many little, I guess, nuances to a quality cycling kit. And I'm still kind of discovering this because I've had people, I'm just going to call them out right now, Jonathan Lee, tell me that I still don't know maybe the best of the best. But also I realize I'm like, dude, maybe I shouldn't try it because then I know. And it's funny because I've ridden, you know, this is like with bikes. And you ride the nicest bike out there for so long, if you go down or you go back on that like group set or this or that, I mean, sometimes you realize, okay, it's not really that big of a deal. But then other times you're like, oh, dang, yeah, that's out there and I don't have it right now. And it sucks. I miss it. So I would just say, yes, you are going to notice a difference in the quality. And oh, I went off track, but I was going to say the nuances of a bib. It's like, yes, okay, it could be the thickness of the padding potentially. It could be just full on the shape of the padding and how it's actually designed to, you know, fit your body better. It's the material. How stretchy is it? Does it stay in place? You know, that's another thing. If you have a bib that's kind of riding up your leg and you're constantly adjusting it, that sucks. And really nice bibs don't do that for the most part. I guess there's always some weird weather condition or something that happens that can make that happen. But, you know, how comfortable are the bib like straps around your shoulders? Like all of those things, you know, by the way, is the bib see-through? Because you might want to have a riding buddy behind you and just to make sure your whole crack isn't showing as you're riding a bike. Because I think we've all seen the person in the group ride who has that like 15-year-old pair of bibs that... Dude, they are like sheer. You know, they should like get a year out of your bibs or something and then maybe move on or maybe just have someone do a little butt check. This is like the yoga pants squat check for girls. Like you got, how I get, I don't want to just say girls, maybe guys too. This is a yoga pants squat check in your bibs. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different things that are that you can take into account, but they do make a huge difference. So I would just say, yes, go experience it, but just be warned, you're not going to want to go back. Or you'll probably do what I have, which is you get that one nice pair of bibs and you just wear them out until you can get the next pair. And then hopefully you can finally catch up and maybe get a second pair faster. And then you're kind of up on, you know, up on a couple pairs. And this is why I admitted to re-wearing dirty bibs and pulling them out of the tamper, which people who haven't heard that yet are probably thinking it's disgusting. You know, I'll be three rides deep on a bib because I'm like, yo, these are the only ones I have right now that are super nice. It's only been till very recently, and thank you to LEL for supplying me with such awesome product, that I've been able to have multiple nice pairs of bibs and just riding kit in general. So yeah, anyways, go try it, but be warned. Once you do, you may not want to go back. This next question is from @chloe.shuin. I think I'm mispronouncing her last name, but Chloe rules. She's in Canada and she's been tagging me in her fat biking snow post. And props to you, Chloe, because people struggle enough with motivation to go ride when the weather conditions are near perfect. I mean, I see that a lot here in California. I myself don't like riding in the cold, and I know you can have the right gear and go out. I've actually fat biked in the snow. It's super fun. But to do that through such a long period of time, aka winter, takes a lot of commitment. So props to you on that. She had a back injury and wrote in this question, and I really want to make sure I dove into it for her. So she says, how do you manage training consistency around injuries? For context, I have something stuck in my back, probably from cross-country skiing. I wanted to stay consistent with my workouts, but I also don't want to make it worse. It's a really good point. It's a very fine line, and I do struggle with that, whether I'm injured or sick, is trying to do the most that I can without doing too much, because I almost sometimes would prefer the feeling of overdoing it a little bit so I knew I tried at least. But I wouldn't say that's the ideal mentality, because it has come back to bite me more than once for sure. So what I would really say to do, and the best approach, is just to realize, okay, just because you can't do everything doesn't mean you can't do anything. It is so often I talk to someone who's like, yeah, you know, I haven't worked out in 3 months because my shoulder, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I'm hearing it. And of course, I'm never going to be rude to somebody. But the first thing I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, what do you mean you're not working out because your shoulder? you have the whole rest of your body. Or when someone's like, oh, my knee, oh, my hip, my back, my wrist, my ankle, yada, yada. And I'm like, I mean, I hear you. Maybe you're not doing the same thing that you were doing, but you're not doing anything. I don't even understand that way of thinking. I mean, to me, that is like just drawn up. It's like you got your injury and you're like, bingo, here's my little, ticket to not work out. Is that rude to say? But it's the truth. Just because you can't do everything doesn't mean you can't do anything. And I know a lot of that comes from just the defeat of the injury, where you're finally on track, you feel like you're doing so well, being on top of your commitment to your workout, your training, you're making progress, boom, you have an injury and you're just like so frustrated that you want to just kind of throw it out the window. But I really recommend finding what you can do and just do it. And that takes a little trial and error. And I do understand that I'm a trainer. I know what options are available and modifications. Like, it's very easy for me to tweak these things and come up with it. But that's why, you know, I'm here to support you guys. So I've had Dialed Fam members reach out and say, yo, this is I have dumbbells. Like, can you help me, you know, get past this injury or do a workout for me or something? And I'm not saying I'm out here just writing custom workouts all day, but to put together even a circuit that you can repeat a few times per week that doesn't aggravate your injury and it still helps you stay on track. Yeah, it's not ideal. Yeah, it's going to be more redundant. Yeah, you can't do everything you're doing, but you're still doing something. And not only is it going to help recovery most likely because of just blood circulation, but it's going to keep the endorphins in your brain going. You're going to build that habit of training through the injury, which is very important. So that's all the reasons why to do it. Now, for your back specifically, I would say let's talk about your riding first off. One thing you can do if you have an indoor trainer is really elevate the handlebar position. Obviously, you're sticking to most likely just easy spins, endurance zone at the most likely. But you can put like a exercise ball, a Swiss ball, or stability ball, whatever you want to call it, on your handlebars and just lean on that with your elbows. I've seen people with collarbone injuries or shoulder injuries do that as they're getting back into riding. You could just literally stack up a bunch of towels just so you're, you know, even 6 inches higher off your bars, if that does help your back and allows you to spin without any irritation. So I would kind of attempt that. Obviously, it's not ideal. It's frustrating. It's going to be a little bit of a cluster, but even if it means you get a 30-minute spin in opposed to nothing, I mean, I don't even have to tell you which one's better. Or if that's not even going to be an option, try and walk, try and hike instead of riding. I'll be the first person to tell you, I almost never do that, but I would if it's my only option, without a doubt. From there, for strength training, you're going to want to maybe try out some seated exercises if you do have a bench or some equipment, you know, stuff like seated shoulder press or even an incline bench press opposed to laying all the way back down, or lower body variations that are like assisted. So for a squat, you could put the Swiss ball on a wall, lean up against it and squat up and down, and then you don't have to control your core and engage your back the same way. Obviously, the more machines and the more equipment you have through injuries, the more likely and easy it is to strength train, because, you know, if you have machines, legit machines that you can just sit and work muscle groups, yeah, this completely changes how you train. Most likely, it's not going to be maybe as functional or what I would recommend when you're perfectly healthy. But again, it's like you can still train and you could still get the muscle activation. And maybe you could even develop some weak areas. You know, maybe you just spend some extra time on a hamstring curl machine or something like that. So those are the things I would hunt out and search for. But the biggest thing is keeping that habit of working out in and building that resilience of training through the injury. So freaking important. Now, other than that, let's just say, okay, the injury is so bad that you really are not going to be doing any physical training. And it's got to be bad, people, okay? It's got to be bad to really qualify as not doing anything. And so what I would say is, if you can't do that physically, and even if you have to lessen what you're doing physically, you can still turn way more attention to other areas of your health, of your fitness, of your just mental health. So this is nutrition, sleep, as I said, mental health, mental performance. These are things that you can now maybe either have time or energy to devote to and kind of analyze. You know, you don't have to freak out and try and dissect everything, but you could say, hey, you know what, maybe I don't have to work out as much this week. I'm going to actually get a little bit more sleep. Or maybe I'm going to go to the grocery store and keep my fridge stocked so I can have the foods I want to, you know, hit my goals. Maybe I'm going to try a new recipe. Maybe I'm going to read every day. Or maybe I'm going to try and meditate for 10 minutes or whatever it might be. Like, those are all so valuable in the big picture. And remember, you guys, really happy, healthy people off of the bike are going to have better bike rides, even though it's completely unrelated. you're gonna like having okay. I'm like trying to explain mental clarity right now while I can't find my words. So when you go on a bike, that feeling of freedom and like a clear head and ability to just get in the zone is so much easier, obviously, when you're not carrying all this baggage into a ride. But on the flip side, if you come into a ride with a bunch of baggage, a lot of times you end the ride and it feels a whole lot better. Maybe it's not all solved, but you have a lot of temporary relief. Or, you know, I've been, 80, this happened to me like 2 weekends ago. I talked about it. I did a century ride and literally 80 miles in was the time something hit me and I was like, wow, like that is exactly what I needed to know to solve this, or that's the mindset change that I needed. So a little bit of a tangent there, but I think that regardless, figure out the way to train around your injury or things that you can do that are still productive towards your health and fitness and allocate that time for it. Again, the time you spend working out that might be interrupted could be used for something else in your health and fitness journey to still benefit it. The next and final question is from @Ben_Wildman. First off, Ben, I got to know, is that your real last name or is that a nickname? If that is your real last name, you are destined to be a legend. I just got to throw that out there. Wildman, that's so sick. So he says, hey, Derek, I've been loving the podcast and all the great information you put out. It's inspired me to really look at my body composition and try to improve it. This brings me to a question which might be good for the podcast. Which smart scale do you recommend and use? I'm currently using a cheap generic scale which appears to give a very inconsistent reading on a day-to-day basis. My body fat percentage will vary up to 4% on a daily basis with zero change in diet. Now, Ben, that's a really good question because most scales now that you buy, they're basically all bioelectric impedance scales that hook up to an app and they give you the readings of your bone density and your body fat composition and your muscle mass and your everything, right? However, you are correct. I mean, when you're buying a scale for $60, $80 that it supposedly does all that, you can't really expect to have these crazy consistencies. And I'm going to tell you how to solve that without actually spending more money, because the truth is I have a scale like that at home. I think it honestly was like a $100 scale. I bought it off a random influencer. Literally, I think it's called FitTrack, because there was like a 40% off discount code. I don't know if that's a bad sign or not, but the truth is, I really think if you're in that ballpark price range for a scale, that you want to just use it for your weight in general. I don't know, probably just your weight. I was going to say general consistencies, but again, it swings so wildly, like you're saying, no pun intended, Mr. Wildman, but that it's hard to really look at those other numbers that it gives you and really that the marketing is pushing you towards. Oh, it's not just your weight, it's this and this and this and this. But the truth is you probably just want to use it for your weight, in my opinion. And even when the weight is not on point, like perfect, because scales can vary a couple pounds, that scale is still going to be consistent, even though it's a little light or a little bit heavy. And that's why you want to use it, because although ideally you'd have that exact number that you're at, what you really want to see is, okay, this is the number the scale says, and based on what I'm doing, it's moving this direction or whatever. So you just want to use it for your reference and your guide. Whether or not it's up or down to 2 pounds is honestly irrelevant. For the most part. Then again, if we're, you know, you're doing your FTP test, you want to get that watt per kilo, you maybe try and find a scale that's on the light side. but you know what I mean. You get the general idea. Use it for your weight. That's what it's going to be the most accurate for. And from there, just use it as a guideline. Now, the reason I have the FitTrack scale was because I like that it could hook up to my phone. I think that was very helpful for tracking my weight. It gives me a little bit of a graph. But I also agree that I found that it was very inconsistent in regards to body fat percentages. Now, luckily for me, I have a $6,000 in-body scale at my studio. And I don't bring up the price to be a douchebag. I bring it up to tell you that that's what it takes to get accuracy. And not only is it a foot reading, but it also has hand sensors that go on both your thumb and your palm, both your heel and your forefoot. And there's even more of like a, I guess, layers to the process of getting measured and more information that you have to put in this and that. And it gets freakishly accurate, but it's still bioelectric impedance. And what that means is you are having an electrical current kind of like bounce through your body, and it's differentiating between fat and muscle. So it's going to apparently bounce off a muscle, cut through fat. It should show you your bone density. So I don't know exactly what it does. Long story short, it can tell the different thicknesses somehow, water weight, yada, yada, yada. Now, the thing about bioelectric impedance is that it can be wildly, wildly thrown off, and I've tested it, and I haven't brought this up before because I never want people to think my body fat readings aren't legit, but here's the truth, and you deserve to know this if you're listening to the podcast. You can swing this to your favor, dude, so easily. So it really depends on how much water you have in your muscle currently. And this could be the reason why you're seeing such big changes, even though your diet's not changing. It could be totally due to your training. Because if you do a test pre-workout, it's probably going to read on the higher side of body fat. Most likely it's reading on the higher side of body fat because your muscles are a little flat. Now, when you don't have the water in your muscles, they're a little bit flat. To that machine, it just reads it as less muscle. When you have less muscle and you compare it to your total body weight, then it's going to say that you're a higher body fat percentage because it's saying, wow, you have less muscle, but you're still this weight. You must have more fat to fill up that weight. Does that make sense? So if you get some water into your muscle, AKA start to work out, or you jump on the scale immediately after a workout, it's gonna drop your body fat percentage a ton. And you can test it out. I've done it multiple times. Almost every time I've done major cuts, I am on the scale, like, let's just say, I mean, I'll do it almost weekly, but even some days, I'll do it pre and post workout just to kind of see. Or when I'm really trying to get that final number, I'll do multiple readings throughout the day and I'll average it just because we're all so physical. I think it's a good idea if you have that available. Or you really just want to control the consistencies around what you're weighing under. Keep that in mind. The more blood that, or AKA water that's in your muscle, the more muscle mass it's going to show, the more it's going to drop your body fat percentage on a bioelectric impedance. I don't think it does that for DEXA scan. And that's why DEXA scan is kind of, I would say, just the most ideal thing to go and see a real, real true number. You like can't hide. I mean, when I went and got a DEXA scan, dude, they showed me body fat I had on the bottom of my foot. It's insane. It'll show you visceral fat, and so with the in-body machine and everything like that. But DEXA scan, you can't really hide from it. It shows you body fat everywhere, like everywhere. It's kind of freaky. So what I would recommend to you is find a resource to get your body fat truly tested and just go there like once a month. If you're really in a body fat cut and you're really trying to track, you can go once a week. Usually if you go to like a lot of supplement stores, like NutriShop is a local brand that we have, and they'll have like in-body machines in there, and I think it's like $20 to do a test. And just try and control the variables. Like you can make sure that you don't drink water within 2 hours, or you don't eat, excuse me. You make sure you are well hydrated and you don't have alcohol within 24 hours because you don't want to throw off hydration. You don't exercise within 12 hours because, again, it wildly swings the readings. But then again, it's up to you. You can control the variables. Just know that they really make a difference on those types of machines. Or you can go to the DEXA scan, same kind of thing. They're probably going to give you some protocol leading up to it to try and find the consistencies. But use those more accurate resources to get a true number. And just do them less frequently than using your home scale and getting that number that's all over the place anyway. So that is my recommendation. Also, if you want to add in circumference measurements, so use a tape measure to measure your hips, your waist, your chest, your arm, your thigh, your calf, and do circumference measurements. When you compare that to your weight, it'll really tell you what your body composition is doing. Besides the visual that you can see in the mirror, you'll be like, okay, I am losing weight and I'm losing inches. Okay, it's body fat, maybe it's a little muscle. It's just I'm losing weight and I'm getting leaner. Great. Or you could see, wow, I didn't lose any weight, but my waist is like half an inch smaller or 2 inches smaller. I've seen some insane like changes like that, and that'll tell you, okay, you're losing body. You're losing body fat, but you're probably gaining muscle. So remember, people. Muscle only takes up 18% of the room a pound of fat takes up. So 1 pound of muscle, significantly smaller than a pound of fat. And that's why your body can stay the same weight and change wildly in its composition and just shrink, basically. Like the more muscle bound you are and the leaner you are, it's like you're just denser. You're heavier, you're denser, but you're tighter and you're leaner, which is kind of what you want. So using the circumference thing is something realistic that you can do at home. It's a lot easier if you have someone to help you. But that's pretty much what I'd recommend. So I hope that helps a ton. That's really the truth behind bioelectric impedance. I would say, you know, find the DEXA scan, find the InBody as a resource, set up a schedule when you want to go use it, and then just use your home scale for tracking weight and optional use circumference measurements. We made it, baby. This is it. This is the meat, the bulk of the episode, probably why you clicked on the episode. We're going to talk about the perfect cycling diet. Now, we're going to do a brief overview of the initial food tracking setup, stuff you've probably heard me talk about before if you've been listening to the podcast for a while or just following my content or you're part of the Dial Fam. I drill this into people because it's so important, in my opinion, to just basic food knowledge. And then we're going to go into key details about high quality, low quality foods, specific food examples. We're going to talk about carbohydrate timing, how to adjust your days based on activity. We're going to talk about hydration. And then really, I know I'm going to go off on a lot of tangents on you guys, but I did write the most detailed amount of notes I've ever written because I want to give you very specific examples. We're going to use all of my numbers of what I use when I'm doing a cut or a maintenance phase. I never do a bulking phase because my whole life is like a bulking phase. Like my body wants to bulk all the time. I put on weight very easily. And so I will give you the numbers if you are a hard gainer and what you'd want to do there, but just know that doesn't apply to me. Most of this is going to be about being in a slight deficit and wanting to lose a little bit of body fat or a lot of body fat, but doing it in a way that is healthy and that still supports your performance, because the idea that your performance is going to be just completely gone because you're losing body fat is just purely ignorant. It really is. It's someone who's either never done it before or never done it correctly, because although I wouldn't say you're never going to have a day where you're a little, you know, more low energy than normal, maybe your power is affected a little bit, but it's not going to be much. I promise you, if you're tracking and doing things correctly, most of the time people feel a whole lot better. And really, I think the people that see the difference in performance on a negative side are the real, real pros who are putting out, you know, like superhuman performances to begin with. So, you know, if that's not you, that's totally okay. And probably more power to you. So anyways, here is exactly how to start. You guys ready for this? I am looking into freaking notes right now. This has to turn into some form of a blog. I mean, this is nuts. Okay, so here we go. How to start. Now, the first thing that you want to do, and we're talking about, this is how you either maintain your weight, lose weight, or learn how to eat very specifically for rides. So the first thing you want to do is find out some numbers. We want to know what your basal metabolic rate is. Your basal metabolic rate is the amount of calories you burn at rest. Now, this is like imagine you're bedridden, right? You're not getting out of bed. You're not doing anything. Maybe you're just sleeping. That is your basal metabolic rate. That's how many calories it takes for your body to function without any activity at all. Now, as soon as you get out of bed, as soon as you use the restroom, brush your teeth, and you have, you know, your daily just living, walking to the car, even if you're mostly sedentary, that day-to-day movement, your digestive system working, all of these things cause your body to use energy and burn more calories. So that is why you want to find your actual active basal metabolic rate instead of just your basal metabolic rate. So it doesn't stop at the plain BMR. We want to go to an active BMR. So based off of your activity level, now I'm going to warn you, this is a little bit of bro science right here. This is a little bit of a guess and check, but I've never had it not work when someone just nails it. It really, guys, at the end of the day, all of these numbers and all these things you do, it's about being consistently inconsistent. You know, let me just give you a quick example. I'm already going off on a tangent. If you're someone tracking your food and you want to go to Chipotle or you want to go to Subway or some fast casual place where they have all the calories written out and that it's easy to track and you can go get a very clear specific thing, you know, it's not going to be perfect every time. They're not going to scoop 4 ounces of chicken every time. They're not going to give you 150 grams of rice every time or whatever it may be. Sometimes it's a little more, sometimes it's a little bit less. And you want to do the numbers as perfect as possible when you can, when you're controlling it at home. But there are these scenarios where it happens. But you know what? If you go there twice in a month, there's a chance it's going to be a little low one time and a little high one time. It's probably going to equal out. It's going to be okay. So that's how it kind of, you have to think of it with your active BMR. You're not going to have the same daily activity every single day. You know, some days you're going to run around with your kids a little bit more. Some days you're going to be posted up watching a movie a little bit more. I wouldn't adjust it on the fly for that. This number is really only going to add a few extra 100 calories to your day. Now, if you are a very sedentary person, I would just times your number by 1.1. If you were a more active person, I would times it by 1.3. Now, for me, I'm an active person, even outside of my workouts. I take my basal metabolic rate and I multiply it by 1.3. So it goes from 1720, which is my BMR, and it goes to 2,236. No, I round it down to 2,200 just to keep things even, easy, clean. And again, this is consistently inconsistent. So it's not like the exact calorie number, but it's pretty dang close. Now, one thing I want to be very clear about is that your active BMR does not include your workout for the day. That does not include it. This is literally just daily living energy that you need. Okay, so you have that number set. My number is 2,200. I will say also, I've used 2,000 in the past. It hurts. That extra 200 calories for me makes things a lot more sustainable long-term, as I found out through the tracking experience. So anyways, 2,200. Now, the next step you wanna do once you know your BMR and your active BMR, oh, by the way, I'm sorry. To find your basal metabolic rate, I have an equation for this on my website. Go to the journal at dialedhealth.com. Go to, I think it's the very bottom post on the nutrition guidelines, excuse me. And there's a calculator for it on there, like an equation. Or you can just type in BMR calculator to Google and you'll be able to plug in your info and get your number. Just so you know, I've done multiple of them and different equations and done it like calculations on my own. I've used the preset calculators on a computer. They are all within like 20 calories. So most likely it's going to be pretty accurate. So I would feel confident in that. Now, once you have your BMR and your active BMR set up, you want to download a food tracking app. I use MyFitnessPal. I encourage everyone to use it just because I do and I understand it. But there's apps like Lose It. There's the Carbon Diet Coach. There's really good stuff out there. And it's really just kind of personal preference. I don't care which one you use. I just use MyFitnessPal because I kid you not, it's the first one I heard of. Now, you have your active, your basal metabolic rate, and that is like your base amount of calories, right? But what we want to find as athletes, and this is where it comes specifically for endurance athletes, for cyclists, for people that are really looking for performance, you want to find your protein number. This is the first macronutrient number that you want to find. So your macronutrients are carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. Now, basically, to sum it up in like the most general sense of the, you know, how to say it, I'm lost for my words here, but to sum it up, every bit of food you eat is going to digest it down to either carbs, fats, or protein for energy. That's kind of how to look at this. Alcohol, by the way, doesn't really fit into either of those categories. It's pretty much just a toxin, as I've found out and done a lot of research because I have wanted to make alcohol just a really reasonable part of the diet. There's really no benefit of it besides mental relaxation or something. So anyways, we go back to protein. Now, what I recommend is typically on the higher side, and I'll tell you why, but I would recommend 0.8 to 1 grams of protein per day, per pound of body weight. And so, I don't know why I wrote per day on there, but 0.8 to 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight. So, I am 154 pounds, give or take, you know, how many cookies I eat the night before or don't eat. And so right now my protein is at 138 grams per day. And so that's kind of my general maintenance. It's actually at 0.9. But I will say, and we'll get into this later, I tend to up that and drop my carbs as I get really lean. Like if I'm getting toward like 8% body fat lean, I'll swing those. But the more I prefer higher protein because it's really good for your muscle recovery and retention in a deficit. Like, as you are losing body fat, it's almost impossible to not lose any muscle, but you want to hold on to it as much as possible. And making sure you're getting adequate protein, if not a little bit extra, is going to help ensure that as much as possible. And that's where the retention comes in. Also, you're in a deficit. You want to make sure recovery is there. Just make sure, try and get your muscle fibers recovered as much as possible. Give them the nutrition that they need. So retention and recovery, that's why I go a little bit heavy. It also helps you feel full and satiated, which is a game changer when you're in a deficit. So let's look at the whole macro split. You have your protein set up. It's between 0.8 grams and 1 gram of protein per day. You probably have a gram number, but I like to work off of percentages in general when I coach people through this because they apply to everybody. So here's what I mean. Like when you go into MyFitnessPal and you start tracking your food, you have your total calories and then you have a pie chart that has the percentages of carbs, fat, and protein you'll eat per day. Now, what you want to do is adjust your carbs and fat to your personal preference after you find your protein. So you have your protein number locked in. For me, it's 25%, which is 0.9 grams per pound of body fat per day. No, per pound of weight per day, excuse me. And so now I'm going to go find my carbs and my fat. So you can do this off of your personal preference. Some people like a little more fat. Some people like a little bit more carbs. However, most likely it's going to be within these ranges. Carbs will probably be 40 to 50%. Fat will probably be 25 to 35%. And then you have your protein, which is probably 20 to 30%. Now my macro split, hold on 1 second. I'm going to let the delay create some drama here. I had to grab a sip of water. My macro split is 45% carbs, 30% fat, 25% protein. Now I've experimented with other splits, and I will say that even 5% can make a pretty significant difference if you're tracking for a prolonged period of time. For example, like I mentioned, when I'm below 9% body fat, I'll up my protein by 5% and drop my carbs by 5%, and you can feel it. Actually, the first time I did this, it was a game changer because it's what got me the leanest I've been in my life, which is like 7% body fat, I think it's 7.1. But I got a headache the first night I did this. And this is a 5% swing, but I literally had a carb headache and I'm getting to that point where I'm like, okay, your body's really starting to push it. Because I'll tell you guys, just so you know, as you lose body fat, the leaner you get, the more you have to do to keep going. It's not like, you know, a lot of people, if you have 50 pounds to lose, a lot of times you can just not drink soda, you know, for a month, and you replace that with water or a zero calorie beverage, and that could be enough to start losing weight. Those kind of things don't even apply when you're so lean because you are so far beyond that point. And I'm not glorifying it at all. I'm just telling you the reality that the leaner you get, the more you have to do. Like the thought of drinking a soda is completely out the window if you didn't have the exercise to support it. Like you don't even think about that. Like when I'm that lean, I don't even almost think about almonds. Because I'm like, dude, how am I going to fit that in? And I know that sounds gnarly. I'm not trying to turn you off, but I just want to be honest about how it gets. However, I've gone too far with that too. So I've had the carb protein split or like adjusting those by 5%. That really does help you shed that last like bit of weight, at least from my experience. But what I've tried to do even leading up to that is go down to 20% body or 20% fat. And although I can execute it, like I've learned how to eat like very small amounts of fat throughout the day, and I feel actually pretty good. I just feel kind of light when I do that. My digestive system kind of stops working after a few weeks. You know, like basically the last thing, like I just stop pooping. I get constipated. I get weirdly gassy. And I know you didn't really want to hear that. And also I start to miss the fatty foods. And I do realize like, even though I do feel kind of light, I feel pretty good. I don't have that satiated feeling that I get from eating more fats, like the avocados. And like basically, I've learned that my health is just better when I have a little bit more fat. And that's why I upped it to 30%. Also because I love having nuts like in my mouth, like nuts in and around my mouth on a daily basis. And I know you're probably thinking, Derek, I thought this was a kid's show. First off, I got to stop you right there. You are an absolute sicko if you're thinking about anything different than some salted cashews right now. I'm talking about mixed nuts, cashews, peanuts, Brazilian nuts, pistachios, all the goods, almonds, all up in my mouth. I want that on a daily basis because it's really good, man. I love those types of foods. I had some avocado toast this morning with my eggs, but I still did the majority of my eggs egg whites. But when I try and get my fat so low, I'm just basically just doing egg whites and maybe some like fat-free feta cheese or something like that. And now this morning I had a little bit, it was like a quarter of an avocado on this little ancient grains waffle I had with one egg and then the rest egg whites. And I had literally an eighth of a cup of cheese on it. So not extreme at all, but like wide variety of fats. And I just feel so much better. So anyways, find your limit there. But most people are going to start with their macro percentage splits, 40 to 50% carbs, 25 to 35% fat, and then 20 to 30% protein. But again, find your protein number first and then let the carbs and fats figure themselves out based off of what type of diet you prefer to eat, what type you feel better at. Honestly, that is not going to make that big of a difference because again, right now, you're not eating for your workout yet, okay? We're getting your baseline numbers that we can put your workout calories on top of, okay? So with that being said, if I'm in a deficit, I stick with these numbers when I don't burn over 500 calories through exercise, AKA non-ride days, because a dialed health strength workout is going to burn 300 to 500 calories. But if I ride, most likely I'm going to be burning more than 500 calories. So what I'll do if I'm trying to maintain a deficit of 500 calories, and again, we do that because it's in my opinion, like the healthiest way to make somewhat fast progress if you nail it and you're consistent. And you know what's interesting? So technically, 500 calories per day is 3,500 calories of a deficit per week. That's 3,500 calories in excess or in a deficit is 1 pound of body fat. So you're either going to gain it or you're going to lose it, most likely. That's what the science says. But I've noticed that people lose so much more weight. And I think it has a lot more to do with other functions of your body. You know, also when I go into a deficit, I start drinking more water. I usually have somewhat of this like detox feeling in the first couple of days where I'm just pooping a ton. I know you probably want to hear about poop again, but like it's all coming out and usually I'll lose all this bloat. I mean, I'll have people lose, you know, I'll lose usually, you know, 3 pounds in the first couple of days, 4 pounds, maybe even 5 pounds in the first week, purely because it's like my body's just cleaning out. You're just like letting go of all this stuff. So that's really good. And again, if I'm in a 500 calorie deficit, I didn't lose 5 pounds of fat, but it's like you have so much stored up in your body of just gunk that you need to get out at any given time. And when you really give it the opportunity to release that, which is not overeating, not maybe drinking, not having as much like refined sugar and stuff like that. Again, I'm not against sugar and any of that, but there's a time where you got to clean it up just to let your body work better. So yeah, kind of keep that in mind. You'll probably lose more weight than a pound a week, most likely. That's just what I've seen from people. And you guys, by the way, just so you know, this is people in their 50s, in their 60s. This is not just like 20, 30-year-olds, like with no families and whatever. Like this is real people, real obligations, who have had sat at the same weight for 20 years. They start doing this and they freaking lose weight. Okay, I've seen it time and time again. And I still have so many dialed health shred results to get out, to even respond to. I'll blame that one on the twins for now. But anyways, insane results from doing this. So if I burn, back to my point, more than 500 calories on a ride, I'm going to eat up to a 500 calorie deficit. So that means my active BMR is 2200, right? If I burn 1,500 calories on a ride, I'm going to eat back 1,000 calories. And so my total calories for the day are 3,200 calories, right? And since I burned 3,700, I'm in a 500 calorie deficit and I'm still losing weight. Now, the reason it's so important is because you are refueling and aiding that performance. And most likely those calories that you take in are going to be around your ride, or they should be, and they should be primarily carbohydrate. We're going to get into that more in a second, but just keep that in mind. This is how you keep your rides feeling good, is like you eat your normal food outside of your training, and then you leading up to the ride, during the ride, or even right after the ride, you're taking in legit sugar, you're taking in the goos, you're taking in cookies, you're having your post-ride shake that is so many dates and honey and granola and all that stuff, because you can, and you technically need it. You really do need it. And when you fuel and don't stay in that crazy deficit during the workouts, you replenish all that glycogen you used. That's when you feel really good on the bike. Like your performance isn't inhibited. And then as time goes on throughout the day, you start getting back into a deficit, you have more of a normal meal, and you're like almost back to your active BMR type eating, if that makes sense. Now we'll come back to that specifically about eating around workouts, but I will also say it's really nice when you have these big rides because it does give you some flexibility. And, you can have like the sweets and the sugar. The only funny thing is that your body demands it so much that you don't almost enjoy it. Like, it doesn't feel like a splurge in the same way, at least in my experience, where when my body is like, give me pancakes now, I still love eating the pancakes, but it doesn't feel as like a much of a splurge because I literally feel like I have to eat it. But you do. So enjoy it. I'm trying to find that more where I'm like, okay, instead of eating dessert tonight, I'm going to eat this food during my ride, this sweeter, higher carb food, and I'm really going to enjoy it and embrace it and just know that's my thing for the day. Even though it totally lines up with my performance, it's not like I'm splurging. I'm doing what I need to. I want to enjoy it that way and not feel as obligated to indulge, in the evening after dinner, which for most people is the biggest kryptonite. Now, if I'm in a maintenance phase, I just eat back all of my workout calories. Pretty obvious. You want to keep everything at like net zero. If I'm gaining, again, this doesn't apply to me, but there are hard gainers out there, which means you have a hard time putting on weight, putting on muscle specifically. So I would eat all the calories back plus 200 to 500 calories per day, depending on how hard of a gainer that you are. And you are someone, it just depends on your goals. Most likely you want to make sure you are having a third strength training workout per week. If you're not, there's other things you want to do. Obviously, taking creatine, you want to probably have some branched chain amino acid supplementation. There's going to be some other things that are really important that help out quite a bit. Now, on rest days, we're going back to kind of eating in a deficit here. I have never actually eaten less than my active BMR. And I've never had my results slowed from it. Now you think, okay, so if you have your active BMR, which is like the amount of calories you're burning per day, and then, you are not gonna work out that day, so wouldn't you take calories off of that to stay in a 500 calorie deficit? Logically, yes, that does make a lot of sense. And the reason I didn't do it initially was kind of an oversight. Like, I didn't think about it that way for some reason, but I never had it slow my results. And I really believe that's from just having a revved up metabolism from your consistent workouts throughout the week. It's not like you train 6 days in a row and then you have one day off and all of a sudden your body's just sitting there like a big old lazy piece of poopy. A lot of poop references. Sorry, guys. I have 3 boys now, so I'm just getting used to all this stuff. So you're not just like a big old lazy poo on the couch all of a sudden with no physical fitness. Like, you're like, things are still revved up in your body, right? A body in motion needs to stay in motion. That's why, of course, we don't just rest, we recover. We stretch, we do foam rolling. We don't just like cocoon up for a day most of the time. Anyways, so what I would say is, if you wanted to cut your active BMR numbers, those extra few hundred calories, you can, but I really wouldn't feel obligated to, especially if you're just taking one rest day per week. If you are taking more rest days per week, maybe you should cut it down to your BMR. But I wouldn't go below your BMR. Even if it's not a 500 calorie deficit, you're kind of technically, I guess the science would say that you are going into actual starvation at that point because you're not eating back like the essential calories for your body. Truthfully, if it's a couple hundred under, you're gonna be fine, but that's when it really might start cutting into your performance, how you feel a ton, and it might just be kind of miserable. So I wouldn't recommend going below your actual BMR, but if you wanted to cut down to that and not eat those active BMR calories, that is understandable. But again, you're training 6 days a week, even 5 days a week, I don't think you're going to need to. I think your metabolism is going to pull you through, in my opinion. But you can experiment. So what I would say is, if you don't notice progress for some reason and you are nailing it, again, you have to be nailing it to say that you need more, because a lot of people will just not do it and then be like, yeah, it's not really working. And I'm like, but you're not even doing it. So you can't say that. Nail your numbers multiple weeks at a time. And then if you feel like you need to take those calories off your rest day, go ahead and do it. So that is really, you guys, how to eat as in regards to the numbers to obtain the goals that you very specifically want. Those are all the macronutrients that you need to hit, your protein, your calorie numbers, how you need to eat around workouts. That's just the general idea to maintain the aesthetic you want, the body composition you want, and the performance you want. And it's all very realistic to do together. Now, again, it's not easy. I'm not here telling you that it's easy, but I know it works for all sorts of people, all shapes, all sizes, all ages, all genders, all of it. Okay? So keep that in mind. Now, if you don't feel like food tracking is for you, I will tell you that that's okay. And you know, there are people that I believe maybe have a harder time with it. It could just conjure up a lot of emotional, there's so much emotion behind eating. You know, I understand that. I am not going to sit here and tell you that people don't experience that. I'm not going to, you know, be this like callous dude that says you're weak and you need to step it up and do it. I do believe there's more people out there that need to face the facts and accept reality. I do believe that. You know, sometimes you have to push through your feelings. I've had to do it so many times over the years. Initially, the first time I food tracked, I had to look in the mirror and be like, Derek, you're a trainer trying to lead these people through all this dieting, and you're freaking 17% body fat. And again, that's a healthy weight, but it's not the example for people who are trying to be high level performers. Like, that's just the reality. So I had to put myself through this and have that honest conversation with myself. And anyways, the reason I do food tracking specifically is because I really believe that when you look at the numbers and you see them and you interpret it to how you feel, you get the best results because you understand both sides of the food. If you don't want to do that, the other side of it, it's just going to be a lot less clear. It's going to require more guidance, probably weekly calls with a nutritionist. You have to be very intuitive with what you're doing. And those are not bad things, but I'm telling you, it's a different process. It's a lot more fuzzy, and it's going to require a lot more money and a lot more time. And if it's necessary for you, go for it. But those are kind of your two options. So now we're going to go into food types, but I'm going to take a little break, grab some water, pump myself up. Because I think we just freaking nailed that. I mean, come on now, people. Was that not quality info or what? All right. We're coming right back into food types. We're going to talk about hydration. I have some sick quotes for you. I'm going to tell you about how your carbohydrates. Oh, you know what? I should say that real quick. Okay. Just so you know, you guys, when you eat, I'm so happy I looked at my notes. When you eat back those calories from your workouts, oh my gosh, I'm so happy I said this. I need to sip though, 1 second. When you eat back those calories from your workouts, they should primarily be carbohydrates, okay? That is because that's the primary fuel source you're using while you're doing your rides. And I can't even go to the fat adapted thing right now. If you're telling me you're fat adapted right now, for one, I don't believe you. For two, why are you making your life so freaking hard? Why? Tell me why. Please tell me why. Anyways, what I'll say is you're primarily burning carbohydrates. You need to eat those back. The first thing you're going to notice when you eat back all those carbohydrates is that, oh, your percentages are super thrown off for the day. Gosh, I'm happy I didn't forget this. This is a very common question I've had. So that's okay. Now, when that happens, you just need to make sure that you hit your protein goal and then let the other numbers do what they're gonna do. Now, primarily you should be eating back the carbohydrates, but if you have a ride that's over 2 hours, you're gonna wanna start getting some proteins and some fats, not only to help with your satiety, but also your stomach comfort. Like, I don't know about you, but I can't be out there drinking Coca-Cola and eating Rice Krispie Treats for, you know, a 4 hour ride. At some point, I'm gonna need, you know, some grains, some nuts, some seeds, something to fill up, some peanut butters, like something to fill up my stomach, a little protein. And I don't know actually like the science on protein and recovery, taking it throughout rides, but it makes sense to me. Like, I know that spreading your protein out throughout the day is ideal, even more so than eating it directly after a workout, just because it's in your system constantly, right? And if you're on a huge ride for half a day, in my head, it would make sense that you'd want protein in your system a little bit to start that recovery process before you're done. Because, dude, if you're out there for, 4, 5, 6 hours or plus, you're probably going to want some protein in there so your body doesn't strip away at it too much, strip away at your muscle mass, because it's already going to try. You know, you're out on this ride, and it's going to try and pull any muscle that you're not using. If you're doing my workouts, you're going to be using most of the muscle in your body. Believe that, even those biceps, even those triceps, trust me, even on a road ride. But, you know, having those other fuel sources is okay. So you'll notice that your percentages might also come up in fat or in protein or something like that. Or not percentages, but grams will come up, but you'll see the other percentages shrink as your carbohydrates grow. Just make sure, again, you hit your grams of protein per day that you allocated for yourself, And once you do that, then the carbohydrates can run, eat back your calories, don't stress about it. So I hope that makes sense. Expect those numbers to change. And that's why it's so important to get that active BMR set, because it's your baseline that you can work off of each day. I'll tell you that days I do really big rides, I would say over 2 hours, 3 hours, we're talking like 50 miles or more, you know, my carbohydrates will come up to 60, 65%. I've seen them as high as like 70% when I do like a century ride or something like that for the entire day. So anyways, keep that in mind, and I'm gonna take a little break and I'll come right back swinging, baby. We got a lot more to talk about. Yee-hoo! Okay, we're back with round two of this deep dive on the perfect cycling diet. Now, I'd be lying to you if I didn't say that those numbers aren't the only important thing. I mean, obviously, you have to have those numbers we talked about to control your body composition, to make sure that you're performing at a high level on the bike, in your workouts, and everywhere. But your food also needs to be quality. You gotta be taking in real nutrition. And I wanna dive into what that means and also why you would want to take advantage of low quality foods. We're also gonna talk about the difference between high calorie, low calorie foods. Somewhat obvious, but when you compare all four of those together, it can be confusing if you're not intentional, okay? So before we dive into that, there are two kind of contradicting quotes I wanna say to you. And that's only because they're both quotes that I agree with, which is weird, but they also don't really agree with each other. And I'm bringing it up because I want you to know where I'm coming from as your coach. Like, I know that I'm a filter for a lot of you guys on what to do or what not to do. And these are the things that are influencing me. And I want you to know that, you know, sometimes I don't have like a black or white answer on some stuff. And I think these quotes are a real reason for that. So the first one is, everything you eat is either fighting cancer or feeding it. Now, that's an easy one to like agree with. It is very black and white. It's like, okay, everything you eat is either good or it's bad. You know, that is a very tangible kind of thing, right? But is it really? Like, really think about how many foods are not black or white like that. You know, unless you're literally just eating single ingredient foods only that are prepped by you in a perfect circumstance, like that's really the only time all of your food is fighting cancer, probably. And even then, the stress that it could be putting on you could be having a counter effect. Like, if you're so stressed about eating this this perfection that it adds stress to your life, then stress, I mean, is one of the most cancer-inducing things that is out there. So that is a real way when you look at the whole big picture, we're like, whoa, maybe it's not, you know, maybe if I relaxed a little bit, I would be happier and actually my cancer potential would be down. And although it's not through that food specifically, like going into my body and digesting, it's looking at the big picture. So that's, again, it sounds very glamorous in the beginning. Everything you eat is either fighting cancer or feeding it. You see that and you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But when you really think about it, when you try to apply it, I'm like, I don't know. And that's why I almost agree with the second one more, is that there's not one single food that should be defined as healthy or unhealthy. You know, basically it's saying that you need to look at the big picture, because although you might have that Oreo, which we all know, it's my kryptonite, it's always my example. Maybe it's to make myself feel better, whatever. But, you know, like, even if you allow yourself to have that, if it, let's just say, bring some joy to your day, or you're at the party and you have the cake and it's fun, it's the occasion, you have the alcohol, you're hanging out, you're relaxed. What that could do for you mentally is so positive that I'm not going to say it overrides the health impact you have from eating the food and what it does through your digestive system, because in that sense, it's separate. But when you look at the big picture, cancer, stress, lifestyle, you got to consider both of those sides of it. So keep that in mind. In my opinion, there are these beautiful foods that we're going to talk about where I eat them and that I feel so good eating them, because I'm like, that was 100% cancer fighting. Like that, you know, cucumber that I just ate, let's just say for example, is literally as perfect as food gets. Whereas, or that sweet potato or whatever, whereas, you know, the Oreo I ate, the cake or whatever, maybe it has its other purpose, but I know it's not like ideally healthy for me. So there's both sides of it. You know, you can run with whichever one you think is more true. I really believe you got to look at the big picture. And I do think that you shouldn't look at one food like that's unhealthy, that's healthy. keep that in mind. Now, let's talk about what high quality foods are and low quality foods. High quality foods are single ingredient foods. Now, just so you guys know, a lot of this info comes from the Endurance Diet. Not initially, like a lot of it I have learned and implemented before reading there, but I'm currently in that book and I have to acknowledge it just because I am taking stuff that's in the book. I don't know. It felt weird not to give it some credit, even though a lot of these things are stuff that I've had set in my training system for a long time. So anyways, single ingredient foods, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, healthy fats and oils, unprocessed meats and seafood. And then also like the Endurance Diet includes dairy. That one does make sense. Like there's a lot of gut health things that happen with dairy. That one I think is almost even more debatable. I'm someone who limits dairy. I don't drink milk anymore. Unfortunately, I wish I could. I stopped drinking it for a while and I haven't been able to do it. Whey protein tears me up. I can do yogurt, which is pretty cool. I've been having that in small doses recently, but you know, like butter, cheese. Thank God I can eat butter and cheese. I eat eggs every day. It's just basically broadening your like range of variety of foods is the best thing that you can do, period. Like the wider variety of foods that you can eat, most likely you're going to find nutrition in those foods that you may not have found with that narrow window of eating that, you know, you eat the same thing every single day. That may not be bad either, but again, you could be slowly missing that one nutrient over and over, day after day. And that wide variety of diet really supports your overall health. So those are high quality foods. Fruits, veggies, whole grains, healthy fats, unprocessed meats and seafood, and dairy. Now, low quality foods, artificial sweeteners, processed meats, fried foods, refined grains, alcohol. You know, it's pretty obvious. But again, I'm not saying healthy or unhealthy. I'm saying high quality, low quality. I think it's a great way to change your terminology. Now, what you have, if you look at the extreme end, will give you, I think, a little bit more clarity. And also it'll make you realize, like we said, most foods are not black and white. They kind of fall somewhere in the center. So if we look at low quality, low calorie foods, we're looking at something with a lot of artificial sweeteners. Diet Coke, for example, you know, 0 calories or 5 calories or whatever's in it. It's low quality, it's low calorie. And then you have the opposite end of the spectrum. You have high quality and high calorie. This is like an avocado. So this is a food where beautiful, so nutritious, all these micronutrients, beautiful fats. Like it's just, it's quality. This is what like God intended us to eat. I'm sure he knew we'd come up with Diet Coke as well. But also, you know, this is like, you just look at that and you're like, yeah, that's freaking health, bro. You know what I'm saying? So, but the thing is, they're high calorie. If you're trying to be in a deficit, good luck eating a lot of avocado. That's all I got to say. So like, it's not like you can just eat as much of this food as you want if you don't want to be 300 pounds. That's just real. Like you can get super fat eating very healthy foods. Just throwing it out there. You can pack on the pounds. It doesn't give you a green light to just send it. Now, can you get there a lot faster eating a lot of low quality, high calorie foods like a Snickers bar, which is our next thing? Yes. Ben and Jerry's. Yes, when you're eating low quality and high calorie, that is the ultimate combo for a bad health, basically, right? And then we have what is probably the ideal dieting type food or snacking type food or stuff that you really want to consider having, high quality, low calorie foods. I mentioned a cucumber earlier. There's just generally like fruits and vegetables are going to be high quality, low calorie. There's a lot of water in them. The volume of it helps you make you feel full. You have obviously there's single ingredient foods. So think about that. You have low quality, low calorie foods, but you also have low quality, high calorie foods. You have high quality, high calorie foods, and you have high quality, low calorie foods. You need to really eat all of them. You know what I mean? Like, but most of them fall in between and you just want to be intentional. I just made up a new word. You just want to be intentional intentional about what you want to eat. Now, I recommend building up the majority of your diet out of high quality foods. And honestly, there's just going to be a balance between the low calorie and high calorie foods. You know, peanut butter can be a very high quality food, but it's going to be high calorie. You know what I mean? Brown rice and white rice. This is kind of one thing I don't want to say I disagree with on the endurance diet, but I like some refined grains, like single ingredient, like white rice. To look at that and think of that as low quality is kind of tough for me. But I will say, You know, you can have these higher calorie foods that are high quality that you also want implemented into your diet, because that's really just going to be the bulk of what you're trying to do. You know what I mean? Like you're going to have put olive oil, you're going to cook a steak in olive oil, and maybe you put another type of fat on top. Like, you know, whatever it may be, those are real foods that you need to eat, and you need to be okay with those taking up major calories in your diet, because that's ultimately what the quality nutrition is that you want. Now, what you want to do once you build the majority of your day of high quality foods is see where you can implement low quality foods to your advantage. Now, this is like something you don't have to do, but I'll tell you personally, as someone who's come from eating very, very unhealthy foods in my past, daily, and you know, almost like every single meal, and we're talking about everything from pizza to Pop-Tarts to Gushers to ice cream to soda to Hot Pockets and all that, nacho cheese, all that stuff on a daily basis, right? For me, I'm still at the point where the majority of my diet is high quality, whether that's high calorie or low calorie. But if I don't have that little bit of a release valve of that low quality food, man, I just start to feel it after a while. I do. And I have done stints where I have no alcohol or no desserts for months at a time, and I'm in a deficit. Like I can control and understand it, but that's when, even those times, you really want to draw on like the low calorie, low quality foods, and they can really help you stay on track. So again, let's go back to the deficit example. If you are eating in a deficit all day, very high quality foods, which you should be doing, you know, maybe let's just say with lunch, you want to get a diet soda, or you want to have like a zero calorie vitamin water, lemonade. Like I would do that a ton. I don't really go for diet soda. I'll have diet energy drinks. But like a diet vitamin water, it's like a lemonade. It's refreshing. It's sweet. It really can help curb your appetite. And again, just kind of keep you stoked, make you feel like you're not going crazy. It could also be like fat-free pudding at the end of the night, marshmallows, something. Like you'll find, trust me, when you need to find it, you'll find low-calorie, low-quality foods that you can implement. And like at the end of the day, if you have 100 calories left, you're trying to hit your deficit, it's a lot of times you don't want an apple. You know, I get that. I really do. And although that's the ideal choice, having that piece of fruit to get the carbohydrate, to still get the nutrients in, the fact is you might really want that butterscotch fat-free pudding. And the small amount of that keeps you kind of from going crazy. And again, you know, you can ride it out for the long term, which I think is a really good thing. So that's how you want to implement those foods. Mostly high quality, and then hit the low calorie or the low quality stuff kind of throughout your diet, just to, you know, keep things on track as you need. Now, again, if you're not in a deficit, maybe you're not even tracking and you do just want to focus on having high quality foods, that's all you focus on. And then you still make sure that the low quality foods that you have, especially the low quality, high calorie foods you have, let's just say cake, candy bar, ice cream, whatever, is at a very, very low volume, this very small amount. That's still going to be your focus anyways, if you just want to feel good, be healthy, be lean, and perform really. Like I said, the bigger you do with rides, the more leeway you can have, but I wouldn't recommend taking advantage of it. Cause I have tried where I go for an 80-mile ride and all of a sudden I'm like, you know what? I'm getting donuts on the way home. I'm going to get 6. I'm going to get 8 because I literally have the calories for it. And you feel so disgusting. Like you feel so gross. So, and you just don't feel good. I like get all shaky. Like I really find that when you try and eat these calories back from the majority of high quality foods, you're just going to feel so much better. It will parlay into your performance, but also, you know, have some fun with it, have the release valve. It really makes a difference. Now to do this initially, it can help to try and build your perfect day and just kind of write out what you think would be the perfect day. Now this is also in the endurance diet, but I did this long before when I was first trying to just eat better in general. I think, okay, just like I'd write a perfect workout or a perfect training week, I would just say, what would a perfect day of eating look like? Like just a normal day. Let's say the most common day that you have, what would you eat and drink for the entire day? Write it out, try it, and from there, you know, tweak it. Like you could literally kind of go through this guess and check thing, especially if you are tracking it. That is ideal for me. So yeah, try building the perfect day, track it, tweak it, repeat, and it'll get sharper and sharper and sharper. And I will warn you, even when it looks perfect on paper, those feelings come in and those emotions come in and those triggers come in, and those are going to change things. And that's why you have to really just like set something and try it. But again, don't feel bad if you can't nail it and you have to keep modifying it. I mean, shoot, I'm continually modifying my diet, and it's just continually getting, I would say, not just better, but more on track with my goals and my lifestyle and what I want. Now, I'm looking at my notes here. We already went over why carbohydrates throws off your percentages. I guess I think that's pretty much it as far as food goes in particular. One thing I do want to touch on is hydration. Now, I'm going to take a sip. I know, no pun intended, I guess. We're all, the throat's all lubed up, ready to talk. Now, I want to talk about hydration because it is so important, but I want you to know that this is an area I haven't done as much research as I probably should have on. Now, I'll tell you some tricks I use and kind of how much I drink throughout the day or riding or stuff like that. But I just want to throw that out there. As I was writing this out, I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm going to have to seriously research this. And I'll get back to you on that. But here's what I do know about hydration. So first off, water should be the first and last thing you drink every single day. Just drink water. You guys, you can, does, you know, let's just say an electrolyte mix count as water for like hydration? I think so. It does, but it doesn't, because it's also just not water. Like, it's good to drink things that hydrate you, for sure. But you want to just drink water at some point because of the purity of it, in my opinion. You know, I have people tell me that they don't like the taste of water. Dude, you're going to have to get over that. What human doesn't want to drink freaking water? Like, if that's you, I'm telling you right now, I'm not, are you wrong? Are you a bad person? Should you die? No, just kidding. Okay, I do kind of think you're wrong. I'm going to be honest. Like, if you can't just sit there and drink a glass of water, you have to really reevaluate why. And most likely it's because the water is not triggering some sort of satisfaction. And most likely you need that from every type of food you eat. You have to remember, guys, when you eat, the goal of eating is to not be this, like, as Tony Horton would say, it's not about having a party in your mouth every single time you take a bite of something. You know, you want to eat foods that you enjoy and you like. But you guys, when I sit and crush a bag of carrots, 150 grams, 200 grams, I love carrots for a lot of reasons, but I don't love them that much. Like, I got to kind of force them down. I've talked in the past about being aggressive when I eat salads, because sometimes you just got to freaking get it down your neck. And that's okay. That is totally okay. Like, and most people I've talked to that don't want to just drink straight water, it's because of that. It's because it's like, oh, it's just like not really good. Suck it up. Literally suck it up. Take that water and suck it up. Just chug it really quick. I don't know. Just drink freaking pure water. Like, can you think of, like, give yourself the nourishment of something that pure. Hopefully you're drinking just quality, good water, whatever. Okay, so that's my little rant right there. Now, what I'll say is it should be the first and last thing you drink every single day. 12 ounces minimum, okay? Do you hear that? 12 ounces minimum, people. Before your coffee, after you, you know, eat your dinner and have your drinks or whatever you have, make sure 12 ounces minimum before you go to bed. It should be the first and last thing. I usually do 16 ounces. I kid you not, guys. I do 32 sometimes. I will fill up an entire mason jar and just freaking chug it when I want. And a lot of that is based off of how I want to feel. You know, maybe I did have, you know, more alcohol the night before and I woke up a little dehydrated, or maybe I did a big ride that day. Maybe I'm just dehydrated in general. I will literally just wake up and chug water. I don't expect you to be that crazy or aggressive, but I've been doing it for a long time and I cannot imagine not drinking a significant amount of water before coffee in the morning. I can't imagine it. Like, literally, that sounds like torture. It really does, because you feel so good after getting that baseline of water in. And same thing with going to bed. Like, I don't know. I can't imagine not knowing I have that fresh layer of like hydration in my system. And again, it's all mental. It's all kind of bro science, but I've just learned that these things have helped me a ton over the years. Now, if you're concerned about taking in enough water in general, you can track it. I really recommend drinking at least 100 ounces of water a day. You know, try a gallon of water a day. Truthfully, I just make sure my pee stays clear. You know, I've tracked my water before and it was like a gallon and a half. I've tracked my water on big ride days, including that, it's like 2 gallons. And again, I know that not people don't want to just sit there and chug all day. Like, my wife doesn't drink very much water. Like, she just doesn't eat and drink very much. But there's times I literally stick a glass of water in her face. I'm like, drink half of this now, at least. You know, whereas I could just drink the whole thing and I wouldn't have to think about it. She has to intentionally do it. So again, I get where you guys are coming from. I've worked with a lot of people that struggle with getting in water, but you know, it's something that you can track and find out where you're at. Try and drink 100 ounces of water a day. Just try and make sure your pee stays clear. Also, if you are in a deficit, water is very satiating. It's going to make you feel more full. But this goes into my bro science behind hydration on the bike. I've always, because I've drank so much water, literally just in the last, I would say, probably like 10 years. I don't think water's ever been an issue for me. And I'm very intuitive with it on my rides. I like to be hydrated. Literally one of my least favorite things on rides is to have to conserve water. And I'll do it from time to time, but I really don't prefer it. I've always drank more than probably I need. And there's been times, of course, I get dehydrated. You know, you're ill-prepared, something happens, whatever. But I will say, I've always been very intuitive and never felt like I even needed to research it. And I want to for you guys for clarity. But the big thing I've learned is that you really want to make sure hydration is not the only thing. Like taking in the electrolytes is so freaking important for your body's retention, especially when you're eating really high quality foods. You're probably not taking in as much sodium through your diet. So making sure you get some sodium in there is super, super important. So I start every single ride with electrolytes. I would recommend doing that, whether they are low calorie or high calorie. That's up to you. Personally, I like starting with a low calorie electrolyte. Because I tend to, like, sometimes I feel a little bogged down if I have the calories right away on a ride. And I would prefer to take them in 30 minutes, 45 minutes into a ride, whatever, opposed to starting off with it right off the bat. So I use the P&G electrolytes. Shout out to those guys. Use the code DialedFam30. Save some money on your order. DialedFam30, P&G Nutrition. It's really good. 20 calories. Their watermelon cucumber is amazing. There's not a lot of sodium in it. They have actually kind of made it for daily use. So I literally will take my salt crusher and I'll just crush like four big rounds into it. Again, I don't have it measured, but it feels like it's enough. And also starting with it in the beginning of the ride, I know that it really helps you retain the most amount of water throughout the ride. After that, again, it's like getting that baseline down. So keep that in mind. I don't have specific, like, you should drink this amount at this time, like I do for ride food. I don't want to say anything stupid. I will say, though, it seems like that is a variable that is more, that could change more than almost anything else because of temperature, because of intensity, and all these other variables, and even food. Like, intensity does maybe change how much you want to take in. I say that kind of not really knowing for sure. But with water, it's like, okay, if I'm really not sweating, you're telling me I need to take in the same amount as I do on a day where I'm pouring sweat. Doesn't make sense to me. But anyways, keep that in mind. Those are my recommendations. Starting in every single day with at least 12 ounces of water. Make sure you're at least drinking 100 ounces per day. That does include your riding water. Taking some electrolytes at the start of your ride. So that's pretty much it, guys. I think we nailed it. I'm feeling good about it. I hope that helps you a ton. I hope it really clarifies the difference between the numbers and like high quality and low quality foods. And one thing I want to leave you guys with is kind of these, I would say, I have a quote for you, but I just really want to let you know a few things. This is going to be getting your mindset into implementing everything that we've talked about. First, some hydration. One second. Now, here's what I'll say. Kind of like in the beginning, the people who find success are those who think that the pain of dieting or losing body fat is less than the pain of staying the same. Now, for those not interested in losing body fat, the pain of tracking and finding clarity needs to be less than the pain of the uncertainty, expecting, especially in regards to your performance. So even if you don't have a body fat loss goal, body composition change goal, there's still these people. Like, you could literally care less, you're perfectly happy with your body, more power to you. I think that's great. But also, these same people will be like, man, I just feel like I'm leaving some, like, there's a, like, low-hanging fruit. I don't know anything about this. I want to learn. You know, I want to make sure I'm getting the most out of my performance. Yeah, I don't care about losing body fat. I just want to, like, perform better. If that's the case, you still have to go through this process, and you have to run it at maintenance. And I don't know what else to tell you. You just have to do it. But that's the thing, is like, people will want that, but it doesn't, they don't want it enough. Like, it doesn't hurt enough to not know that they'll actually go through the real pain of like taking on this ordeal, this process, this potential lifestyle change. And that's the honest truth, you know? The pain of, you know, staying the same has got to outweigh the pain of changing. That's it, period. So keep that in mind. It is so real. Because it's not going to be easy. It's going to take real intention, and you have to literally will it into existence through action. Now, a really, really cool quote that I heard from Lane Norton. This is like the king of food tracking, at BioLane on Instagram, if you want to follow him. He actually owns the app I mentioned earlier, the carbon tracking app. a lot of people love this guy who love food tracking. I love him. I've listened to podcasts with him. I'll tell you, he gets so detailed. Like, he's a full-on scientist. Sometimes, I don't want to say it goes over my head. I just lose interest. A lot of times, like, when I can't practically apply something to the people I work with, I'm like, okay, this is so freaking far, one weird direction. Like, I don't even need to know. And I get lost in it. Anyways, that's a little disclaimer, very sciencey, but he has this quote that he posted on his Instagram, and it's a tweet, and it absolutely nailed it. He says, "Wanting to lose weight doesn't make you a bad person. Tracking your food or restricting food in some way is not an eating disorder. Fat shaming is terrible. Diet shaming is no better. If you're happy with your body composition, great. Don't shame those that wish to change." Now, I say those to everybody listening that is very triggered by the information I gave out about food tracking, why I do it. I do get comments like this pretty regularly, that people disagree, that, you know, eating disorders come from tracking, and everything that this quote says, like, I experience. And it's hard, because usually those people are very loud, and those are people that have personally been through it. Those are the people that should have a nutritionist and have had a very bad experience for some reason. And that sucks. However, I'm on the perspective and the side of it where I've seen hundreds of people at this point now, and I've helped them through the process, not only have these amazing physical results, but literally a mental lifestyle change. And although I think that both sides of it are true, it's tough when someone who thinks that, you know, fat shaming is so bad would shame someone that really wishes to change and is struggling in their current body. So keep that in mind. I just threw it out there because for me as a trainer, it really resonated, and I love it, man. I think that all of these changes and all of these, like, you striving to start moving forward to better yourself, it doesn't mean that you're dissatisfied with who you are currently. And sometimes it does. Like, I've talked about how using guilt as a motivator, like, you feel so, like, we all know the feeling, like, at the end of the day, you crush a pint of ice cream when you said you wouldn't, and you want to lose weight, and you know that you do, but you just gave in, and now you feel like a doggy poo-poo. I'm realizing that all the poop references, you guys, are just me substituting it for, like, swearing. You know, I'll throw down a good swear word here and there. It's just not really my style all the time. So anyways, you feel like poop. You feel the guilt that sometimes you got to embrace that and be like, you know what? That is why I need to change this. I don't want to feel like that. That's okay. It's okay to feel like that. But also, you need to understand that just because there's something that you want to get better at, it doesn't mean that you hate that part of yourself or that, you know, you have all these legit deep issues. It could be like, you know what? Dude, I want to step it up. That's it. Like, it can be that surface level. Trust me. I have experienced both sides of it. I have felt extreme shame from, you know, actions through my diet and exercise. I felt extremely, like, level-headed and just been, like, factual, like, dude, you know what? I can step it up. I want to do better. I'm happy with where I'm at, but I know I can keep moving forward. Those are both ways to look at all of this. It's not really one or the other, and you'll probably, even as one person, experience both sides of those like I have. So that's it, man. I hope you guys absolutely crush this. Please, if you have any information or any questions, reach out. Send me an email, derek@dialedhealth.com. I can get you more information on what you need. The Dialed Health Journal has the nutrition guidelines as a blog post. And then if you're a member, you can see the how to start the Dialed Health Shred. That gives you all the things that you need to get going, like the BMR calculator, tells you the food scale to buy, tells you, like, all the tools you need, you know, just like measuring spoons and stuff like that, kind of what to expect. It shows you how to track your macros, has a video on there, so how to take before and after photos. If you're a member, go in, check that out, and you'll get all the information you need to start as well. And that's it, guys. We're going to jump into an update I feel good. That was nice. I'm sorry. I just gotta like sit and take that in real quick. I'm proud of that info. Don't hold back from getting that info out to other people. I know it's weird sometimes, like, you know, someone wants this, but sharing it acknowledges the fact that they want it and that, you know, it could be kind of, it's weird, it's sensitive, I get it, but just get this message out there to people, guys. I hope it helps a ton. It's time for a personal and business update. This is a fun one, though. Today is my wife's birthday, April 6th. It's Tuesday. Spoiler alert for the people who thought I recorded and posted within 1 minute on Wednesday mornings. I typically do it the day before, and now I'm even trying to do it on Monday instead because of missing that last episode show me. I really can't wait to the last minute, which is kind of the day before, especially with all the things that can throw me off now. In fact, the reason I'm doing it today is because this weekend has been so busy with family stuff. It was incredible. I had an awesome Easter weekend, got some really good rides in, which we're going to talk about in a second. But man, just my ability to work, it's still so constrained. And it's been the hardest thing for me to deal with mentally. And like yesterday, we didn't have childcare, which is just kind of random. My parents are getting their new house all together and they couldn't watch my kids. So I had to work early in the morning and then later in the afternoon and got like half a day in. It just wasn't ideal, man. There's so much stuff I want to put out and it sucks when I feel like I can't get it at the speed that I want. Anyways, it's getting better, but even today is my wife's birthday, so it's a little condensed. Maybe I'm just venting. Sorry, you took that on. Anyways, that's out of the way. Let's talk about her birthday. It's going to be awesome because tonight we're going to a restaurant that we haven't been to in over a year, and it's one of our favorite restaurants. And the reason it's so, I think, exciting or kind of surreal is because when we drove past it when we first found out she was pregnant, like, you know, it was literally close to a year ago. And at that point, we hadn't been to this restaurant in a while, but they have the best blackberry margaritas I've ever had. So it's called Zocalo's, and it's like a chain restaurant around here, but the food's amazing. It's great vibe and just the best blackberry margaritas. And I think for my wife and I, it's the one drink we can agree upon that we both think is like one of the best things out there. And that's kind of rare because she doesn't really drink much, but she just loves, I mean, I love wine too, but anyways. We bond over the blackberry margaritas. We have had an awesome night there before, getting a pitcher, not being able to drive, walking like a mile to a friend's house. It's just fun, fun times, right? So we're going there tonight. And when we drove by it when she was pregnant, like I remember thinking like, oh my gosh, it's going to be so long before we can go there again. And we looked at each other like, dude, that sucks. Because honestly, we don't even like going if we can't get the blackberry margaritas because it just makes it. The food is good, but it's not the whole experience. And so, man, it's crazy that we're actually going there now again. And honestly, as we got toward the end of the pregnancy, it was a lot for her to carry twins. She's small. It's just all of it, dude, is so much. She was going to two doctor's appointments a week. And I'm not going to say it's gotten more mellow since they've been born. That's definitely not the case. But there was just a time where all of a sudden we started building up this restaurant and like putting it on a pedestal of like, when we can finally eat a Zocalo's again and have blackberry margaritas, we will know that we're back on top of our lives. And in a weird way, it kind of feels like that because we are getting used to this new schedule with the twins. And like, even though I said it's frustrating for me with work right now, just my condensed amount of time, and even riding and just condensed time constraints in general have been hard for me. Mentally, I've been more accepting of it, dealing with it in a way more positive way. I really feel like I'm turning a corner on it and figuring it out. But today is her birthday, so it was a perfect excuse for us to get our parents to watch our kids, go out to dinner tonight. It'll be our first night eating with no kids in months. Since the twins have been born, actually, it's the first time that both of us have been away from them. And I can't wait for it. We're probably going to do what every parent does. The first 30 minutes, you're just like, you know, heavy breathing, like, oh, this is awesome. It's so quiet. It's so this and that. And then literally toward the end of the dinner, you're just talking about your kids the whole time. So I'm sure it'll be like that. But man, I can't wait. And it just, for me, it's like very relieving because it has been so stressful the last, I would say, 4 months, especially since the twins have been born, that man, it just, I'm stoked it's here. It feels kind of surreal. So anyways, we're getting the blackberry margs tonight. It's going to be a blast. And if anything, we're going to have some time away from the kids and it's just going to be a relaxing few hours. So that is what we have on tap for the day. But I want to talk about also my riding. And the fact that, you guys, even though my sleep is miserable right now, I'm getting faster. And by faster, I mean really just my fitness. Like, you know, my favorite thing in the world is mountain biking. It's what I've grown up on. I came from a gravity-based background, but it's actually the thing I do the least amount at this point, since I've really chosen to go all in on my business, start a family, and do all that. Anyone who's done either of those things, especially both, can understand that you're sacrificing so much. Like, and I want you guys to know too that, you know, dialed health comes before my own personal riding. Like, I mean that in the realest way. And I made that decision very consciously when I stopped racing, because I realized how much energy I was spending on racing, or not just racing, but like pursuing racing or going into racing with like a real goal of these results and this and that. It takes so much energy. And I'm not saying it's not positive for dialed health, but at this point, my resources on energy and time are so constricted that, you know, I just, like, I haven't made that a priority, and I will be doing some racing this summer. It's going to be super just fun, content, all that. That's it. No special prep, nothing like that. I'm going to show up, see some awesome people. It's going to be great. But anyways, like, I bring that up because, I don't know, dialed health is like the main focus. And although I'm not able to mountain bike as much as I want to, it's for a very specific reason. And it doesn't mean I don't want to be out there. I just have to clarify that. I have so many mountain biker buddies that are like, why are you just on the road bike or on the trainer? Why don't you get out and ride? I'm like, dude, like, I'll tell you if you really want to know why, but this is it right here. This is me telling you. It's just, it is not the priority for me. Like, it's up there. It's like top five, but it's the bottom of that list. So that gets condensed. And like this weekend, I was so happy when I went out and rode, because even though I've lost a little bit of my technical like downhill skill, just like the sharpness is not there like it was when I was mountain biking 4 days a week and shuttling and just doing so much like downhill runs, dude, my fitness has gotten so crazy. Like, literally, I'm kind of blown away. I can't wait to do a ramp test eventually, and I'm not going to do it till I really get good sleep. Because my body's a little broken down. My knees have been kind of achy from the no sleep, but I just have been super consistent with my schedule. I've been sneaking in a little bit of extra volume when I can, you know, just 2 hour trainer rides instead of 1.5 hour trainer rides. And it's really like, it's coming through. So I went on a road ride and I did a loop I normally do. I had to kind of change a little bit of it to shorten it, but it's just under 40 miles and it's got like 2,500 feet of climbing in it, sometimes 28 if I add a climb. And basically that's like the normal for me. If I go out for 40 miles, I'm probably going to climb anywhere between 2,000 and 3,000 feet. Like, I'm lucky to live in a very rolly, hilly area, beautiful roads. And so I went out and I rode it, and dude, I averaged 21.5 miles per hour by myself. And I took content and I was like on my phone. Like, it was rad. And I bring it up because when I started road riding like 3 or 4 years ago, and you know, this was like bare bones, everything is hand-me-down, you know, I was averaging like 16 miles per hour on rides. And so it's crazy because when I started riding more, I got it up to like 18-ish. And then when I started trainer road, it was like 19. And then the last 6 months, I've been kind of around 20. And having multiple days where even I'll go up closer to 50 miles and still have like a 20 mile per hour average, or it's usually like high 19s or something. And I've just been waiting to crack over that 20. And, you know, of course, there's always like things that could be on your side. But the thing I did differently about this ride, and that I physically was able to do, that my body allowed me to, were these just like super raw in the drop sprints over these rollers. Like, there's so many rollers where I live where we're talking, you know, probably 40 vertical feet, and you're up and over in like 10 to 20 seconds, and you just want to hammer all of them, right? And it's exhausting to do when there's so many, and obviously you got to pace and all that. And sometimes I'll stand and hammer, but I was like really going for it. And I wish my power meter was working. I have it on my bike, it's just not set up yet, yada, yada, yada. But anyways, like I know that I was just riding that much harder. And I felt, I don't know, man, I felt really good. And it was just so rewarding to be like, dang, even though I've had to modify the way that I ride, like, it's really coming through, and I feel like strong and I'm getting fast, and it feels awesome. And, you know, my goal for a long time has been to get to 5 watts per kilo. And last time I did my ramp test, it put me at 4.7. I've been well exceeding certain numbers and noticing some rides on the trainers is getting easier. And I think once I can really get my sleep back to normal. And I'm talking, I just want like 7 hours through the night, dude. You know, I'm waking up twice a night at the minimum now and lucky to get 6 hours of sleep basically. And that's what I've been doing for months at this point, and it sucks. So when I can get my sleep back on board, I can't wait to kind of retest and see even how much more that is like enhanced, I guess. Because that is without a doubt the biggest thing that is holding me back from, I think, even just more fitness. So super exciting. Hopefully we'll hit 5 watts per kilo this year and kind of go from there. Now, the next day I did a super early morning mountain bike ride, which, by the way, I lost so much sleep for because I wanted to be able to post an Instagram story and ride, and I had to be back by 9:30 in the morning so that my wife could do her thing and we could do our Easter. So I plan on doing a quick ride, and I just went out on my mountain bike, and dude, I felt like I was on an e-bike. And I know that sounds like weird to say. I've ridden e-bikes. I know what a real e-bike feels like. I know what turbo feels like. Okay, it was not like that speed. But if you go look at my ride, my moving time's like 1 hour and 9 minutes. I climbed like 2,300 feet. I think I did like 12 miles or something like that. And I rode like sick downhills. You know, like I rode like good stuff. And I just hammered. Like, I don't know. It was so cool too, because even though I'm not going to say I can't go descend like I used to. I would just say, even though I'm not on the mountain bike like I used to be, that fitness has translated so much, and I can just go hammer these rides, and it's so satisfying. Like, it's just so good to see your work pay off. And I don't know, I just want to tell you guys, I'm really stoked about that. I'm stoked to see the progress in my riding. Like I said, my personal progress isn't as important as yours to me. But when I do have these breakthroughs, it feels really good to talk about. So anyways, that is what I'm working with. Felt like I was on an e-bike. It was rad. I want that for you guys too. Now, quick overview with the website. You guys, the new calendar on the dashboard is loaded. Have you seen it? Have you loved it? Did you lose your program? I hope not. That did happen to some people, unfortunately. But now we have a calendar where we can actually build out your schedule and help you get organized. You can put guided workouts in with your program. You can add in custom events or rides. And I did a newsletter on this specifically for the Dialed Fam members that went out, and it showed you how to use it and all the ins and outs. And so the thing is, like, I understand that it's a very simple calendar at this point. Now, it's going to help us a lot because from the back end, I can actually go and adjust your calendar for you, which is so cool, as opposed to, you know, just doing it over email and having this like random copy we're looking over. But you can't sync like Strava or Garmin or anything like that to it yet. And right now we have these like ride placeholders. So that will, you know, update down the road, it'll improve. And I'm excited for that to happen and hopefully have this be like your real database. Cause I know that we all have 20 different calendars we use, but most of us don't have that one that has everything, especially when you include your strength training, your mobility, your recovery, a rest day, this and that. And that's what we're kind of striving for. So pretty sick. It's a great step forward. And now it's time to just keep sweeping the programs. We're correcting a lot of any missing reps or rounds or information that wasn't there. That's like the next priority that we're working on. And then we're uploading the Olympic lifting program. So stand by for that. It got pushed back a little bit because of the program sweep that we wanted to address. You know, super important for us to make sure that you have all the reps and everything needed. Obviously, you need to have the program to do the program. And we've been finding these holes in it. And it's cool. It's just, you know, it's hard when you work so hard on something and you do it only to find these errors. And it can feel just like, dang, dude, like, I will honestly admit to this. There are times where you don't want to dive into something because you know you're going to find problems. I think any business owner can understand that, where you just, dude, you know, if you start paying attention to this one thing, you're going to need to make all these steps to correct it. And we're doing that more and more and more. And it's hard because you realize all this thing that you work so hard to create may not work, or it needs to be fixed, or there's these issues here or there. But oh my gosh, I mean, is that not the most important thing ever? So that's like one of the craziest things about like the website, is that I hear everything that's good and everything that's bad about it. And thankfully there's more good than bad. And it's also crazy too, when you have a vision and you know what you want, but then you also start doing it and you realize the steps that it takes to get you there. Like, this calendar is a perfect example. I know what the calendar should look like. I know that you should be able to automatically sync your trainer road workout and your Strava workout and all these things. But like, that's not the first step. It definitely is not. And we're not going to be in beta, you know, for 2 years testing it all this because we just don't have the budget for that. Like, we need to honestly like make money now. And it's important because we support people now and people still get tons of value from it and tons of results. But I still know it's so far from what it needs to be. So anyways, very candid, very open, transparent talk. This podcast has felt great. You guys, thank you so much for listening to it. Everything from the nutrition info to the personal stuff and all the tequila I'm going to drink tonight. So anyways, but let's go to the outro. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Strength Training for Cyclists podcast by Dialed Health. I really hope it adds some value to your week. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me, derek@dialedhealth.com. You can also shoot me a DM on Instagram. Make sure you're following @dialedhealth over there. And please go leave me a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app. Write something positive about the episode. It really makes such a difference for us to help grow and continue to build the audience, get new guests on, and all that kind of stuff. Also, if you're following me on Instagram, if you're active there, please post a story that you're listening to the podcast. You can either screenshot your phone or do a screen recording and post up a soundbite from the episode. Make sure you tag Dialed Health. I'll do my best to repost it and get it back up. And just thank you for that. Because again, that is like the only marketing we're doing to help expose this podcast. And if you feel like you have friends that could benefit from it, find any value from it, it would help me a ton and it would probably help them too. So with that being said, you guys, have an incredible week. I will see you next Wednesday. Start moving forward.